My next guest is Wendy Weaver Baraka, right?
Yes.
Wendy, let me make sure your mic is on. Are you, go ahead and say hello. How are you doing today?
I'm great, thanks. Hi to you.
Okay, let me turn you up and try that again. Say a little, say that again, or say something, whatever you want.
I'm thrilled to be here. How's that?
Okay, great. Speak as close as you can to it.
Okay, you got it.
All right. And Wendy, you are a social worker, so you do social services under a grant in connection with the school system in, is it Morgan County?
Yes.
And how about talking a little bit about your work, what you do, and what your goals are in that work?
Okay. Well, this is my third year working with Morgan County Schools. The first 2 years, I was with a nonprofit organization called Morgan County
Partnership. They provide a lot of early intervention and prevention services for youth around substance use risk reduction, in addition to asset building efforts. They provide several evidence-based programs in schools and work alongside of many different community coalitions. They partner with law enforcement, with the schools, and a lot of caring folks who are really interested in helping youth succeed.
It's interesting. I was talking to a school teacher a few months ago, actually out at Foxhaven, and I asked her how she felt about her job. And she said her job was to keep kids out of prison. Mm. Is that, how does that impress you? And I'm interested from the perspective of what it is that you're up against. Why did they bring you in?
Okay, well, let me backtrack just a little and say that I've been providing services through a grant called Screening, Brief Intervention, and Referral to Treatment. And the purpose of that grant program is to address early risky substance use behaviors, and that will help students who are experimenting to think about the choices that they're making, to think about their health, to learn a little bit more about what it is that they're putting into their bodies and how it affects their brain, how it affects their learning. And the hope of the program is to prevent future dependence. And to also promote student success. We know that students who do use alcohol or other illegal drugs are certainly going to be affecting their ability to learn, their ability to focus, and not to mention their legal and physical safety. Mm-hmm. So we want to help them make the best choices for themselves. And so leading up again to, you know, the comment about helping to keep kids out of prison, that is hugely important. We want our children to succeed so that they can take care of us in the future. They could reach their goals. They can establish, you know, really hopefully healthy patterns of behavior and relating to other people and fulfill their dreams, whatever they are for each individual child. And keeping them safe, keeping them out of the legal system, keeping them on the right track, that's our role as adults. It's, you know, hopefully we had folks doing that for us, mm-hmm. guiding us and giving us some leeway to make our mistakes, but being there to help pick us up when we did fall so that we can be doing everything that we're doing now. Mm-hmm. And so that's an important goal, too.
And is there a component of this also to try to intervene before kids get into drugs and alcohol? I mean, what is it that is triggering this resort to drugs and alcohol? And how do you identify for early intervention or assistance?
Well, in the county that I'm providing services in, we have, like in many other counties in West Virginia, a high poverty rate. In addition to that, we have a higher than national average rate of substance use. And we provide surveys in the schools where kids are given the opportunity to talk about what they're up to and self-report whether or not they're experimenting with drugs or alcohol. And that helps us to get information about how many students are engaging in those behaviors and how many are not. In 2013, we participated in a national survey called PRIDE, and 64% of students reported that in the last year prior to taking the survey, they had not drank any alcohol. And that's something to celebrate, because we know that accessibility is there. If we have parents who are using in our communities, even casual drinking, it's not hard to get into the cabinet or get into the fridge and sneak a little something. And we know that adolescents will do that. You know, they're experimenting, they're curious, and then they might also engage in situations where they're out at parties and they have access as well. So we've got this, they're already experiencing some family hardships, and if there are a certain portion of parents who are having difficulty with substances, they're exposed to that possibly in the home or in the community. Nowadays, almost everyone knows somebody who is struggling with drugs or alcohol. And then you add financial hardships, just typical adolescent curiosity, and it's kind of like this perfect storm of opportunity to go one way or another. And of course, there's a lot of in between. But the way we approach trying to help prevent future dependence is through this program, we provide screening, which includes questionnaires about higher risk behaviors. So if a student is using something to relax or fit in, that's a higher risk behavior than somebody who might, you know, have a sip or two of alcohol on occasion when they're at a party or sneak it, you know, from the family home. Excuse me. That kind of risk of getting to the point where you need something to relax or fit in or feel good about yourself indicates more of a likelihood that it could potentially become a dependent behavior. Also, if somebody is experiencing using a substance and forgetting what happened to them or getting in trouble with the law at a young age, those are the higher risk behaviors that might lead someone to eventually be looking at a prison sentence or a DUI situation. So we provide these screening opportunities where students answer questions, and it's voluntary. They don't have to participate in the program. And at the beginning of each year, before we provide these screenings, we ask parents through a letter and other promotion through the media about the program, whether or not they want their child to participate. And generally, in the last couple of years, we've had about anywhere from 15 to 20% of parents that say no, thank you. And there could be various reasons for that. You know, they may like to have those conversations with their students themselves. And so once we do these screenings, if a student answers yes to one or more questions indicating higher risk substance use behavior, then we follow up with an opportunity to have a confidential discussion. And we talk about confidentiality during the screenings, which usually take place in the classroom in front of, you know, an entire class of students, where I introduce myself and I let them know about how I'm professionally bound to keep conversations private, with a few exceptions. You know, if a student is giving an indicator that they're thinking about harming themselves or someone else, or if someone is harming them, like a caregiver, those are the situations where I might have to break confidentiality. But if we're just talking about what they're up to on the weekends and some choices that they're making about drugs or alcohol, those conversations can stay between us, Nothing's going in their student file. We're not reporting to law enforcement. It's a new kind of conversation. Most all of our students are receiving messages from very early grades in our school systems, and rightly so, about drugs and alcohol and what the risks are and how to say no, how to handle peer pressure. And yet we know that, according to our Pride survey, 36% of students reported in 2013 that they had tried alcohol in the last year. So there's a certain percentage that, you know, that's what they're up to. Those are the choices that they're facing and making. So we want to be able to let those students know that there's someone they can talk to about it. We want to ask them using motivational interviewing techniques, which is an awesome approach. That's a guided conversation based on a partnership and unconditional positive regard that wherever they are, that's where I'm going to start with them. Mm-hmm. So we might explore the results of their survey, maybe take an inventory of what they have tried, and ask questions like, you know, what do you like about using alcohol? What's not so good about it? So that they have the opportunity to engage their critical thinking skills to explore what it is that they're up to, how it does or doesn't fit in with their goals, and whether or not they know about the impact of a substance on their body or their brain. And I always ask permission before, you know, giving advice or information, because first of all, I want to let them know that they're in charge of making their choices, and yet maybe they could use a little bit more information. And when we try to talk people into things that they're not ready for, it creates an opportunity for them to argue for the status quo. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we want to avoid. And we want to gear the conversation towards change talk. So if they identify a couple of reasons why they like to drink, and then there's 7 reasons why it's not such a good idea, then I'm going to steer the conversation toward those reasons that they identify as being troublesome.
Now, how about the drivers, the underlying drivers that push kids into this? How do you get at those? And I know you do referrals. Mm-hmm. What types of referrals do you do? And do you work with these underlying conditions that may be pushing some of the kids into these situations?
Absolutely. We know that there's a really close link between mental health and substance use risk. So it's important to also screen for symptoms of anxiety or depression or a history of trauma exposure. And that's a new component to the services that we are providing this year. And I've actually stepped out of the substance use risk reduction role and into a mental health risk reduction role, which is an expansion of the grant program. So now there are 2 of us that are working through the screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment process. So screening for any type of mental health risk, looking at stress levels. I mean, our young people are reporting more stress than ever before. And how we handle stress is oftentimes correlated with how our families handle stress, how our parents handle it, how we see other people in the community handling it, the messages that we get about, you know, what are some effective ways to relax and chill and kick back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any type of family history or exposure to previous substance use or addiction is going to play a role as well. You know, there's the belief that there can be a hereditary component, and there's science to back that up. And then there's also the environmental component. So there could be a lot of things that are informing a young person's choice about whether or not to use and or what to use. Mm-hmm. We also know that in our state, there's a really growing prescription drug abuse epidemic and the link between opiate use and heroin addiction is becoming more and more clear. So it's so incredibly important for us to be asking these questions and having a different sort of conversation with young people to protect them and to increase, you know, their knowledge about, you know, how their brain works and how their decision making now will affect them over time.
And how about alternatives? I think, and with me also now, we're listening to Wendy Weaver Baraka, who works in social services with Morgan County Schools. And Lacey Walker is here from Fox Haven Learning Center. And I know a lot of the work that Open Minds does and a lot of the work at the Fox Haven Learning Center is also about helping kids to learn how to deal with stresses. Would you care to say a word about that, Lacey?
Yeah, so a lot of the work that particularly Jan Hummer does through Fox Haven is teaching children to be more aware of their feelings involved with their day-to-day life and their stresses. So giving them techniques to explore that in a way that gives them that peace of mind that they can kind of dig into, you know, what are these feelings? How do I deal with these feelings? And giving them a safe space with other people where they can do that. So that's certainly something that Jan Hummer is very involved with. And kind of the nature component that we bring into it at Fox Haven is for some of these students, they don't know what silence is. They've never heard it before, especially if they live in a city or even in a suburb. They're not familiar with what silence looks like. They're not familiar with darkness either. And so to bring them out to Fox Haven and let them really experience both of those things, and it kind of can help take them out of some of the turmoil that's within and give them more space to explore.
I was talking to my granddaughter not too long ago, and as she mentioned, or somebody mentioned about her, you know, need to be concerned about alcohol. And I brought up alternatives, and I said, you know, it's basically a matter of dealing with stress. You're going to deal with it one way or another. I mean, you have outlets like sports activities, you have meditation and mindfulness, things that will help you control your own mind, because your mind runs out of control. And I think most people at that age, they have no, I mean, this thing is like charging through them with the hormones and the mental activity and things they're learning, the exposures they have. They need coping skills for this. And I mentioned, you know, about meditation. You need to learn to meditate as an alternative. And she was said, you know, teach me. It's like, okay, the kids, they don't even know there's an alternative.
I have been really fortunate to have a lot of opportunities to talk to kids about stress reduction in the last couple of years, not just through the ESPERT program, but being a part of wellness fairs, having a group in particular at the high school level with alternative ed students, where we join together a morning during the week and we talk about stress and some of the ways that it manifests in our body. We talk about the connection between our brain and stress. And then we have a mindful minute where in the beginning of the group, I taught them a controlled breathing technique. And so each morning at the end of that group, we sit quietly, close our eyes, and breathe deeply for a minute. And hopefully, you know, over time, they start to recognize the power of their breath and how it can calm that stress response and how they can widen that gap between having a thought and a feeling and then going on to behaving based on that thought and feeling. And I've learned a lot from Jan Hummer And I've been practicing, you know, some of the techniques that I've learned from her and what she's been doing along with Amanda Adkins and you, Lacey, and other folks involved in Open Minds. It's such important work. And anytime I can inject some mindfulness techniques and some of that, you know, little moments of meditation, I can see almost an instant softening of somebody's face or a reduction of tension in their shoulders. We do some progressive muscle relaxation too. And then I ask them, I say, you know, how many of you all have trouble falling asleep at night? How many of you all, you know, can go from 0 to 60 with anger in 2 seconds flat? If that's the case, then you can use this technique to relax, to catch yourself so that you can make that better choice, because no one wants to sign up for probation. No one wants to sign up for, you know, a fight at school that's going to result in an suspension. And yet they find themselves in these moments, and to not have tools to help them handle it is, I think, it just puts them at that higher risk level.
Mm-hmm. Wendy, I think kind of what you're hitting on is teaching children how to be stable in vulnerability. You know, when you're honest about your feelings and when you express your feelings, that is a huge vulnerability, especially with other people and your peers. And especially as we move into teenage years, that gets really difficult. And so one thing that I think would be interesting for someone to start kind of pushing and focusing on is that when you're kids, there's all these extracurricular activities that bring you together and give you community and give you a space where you can start to find those people to be vulnerable with. But as we move into teenage years and adult years, I find that I've been having a harder time connecting with people my own age because everybody just wants to go out and drink. Mm-hmm. And I don't really understand why that is, other than it can be difficult to hold conversations and feel comfortable being vulnerable without something to kind of take that edge off. And I think that that's a cultural thing that maybe, you know, is passed down generation through generation, is that that's how you communicate, is by taking that edge off. So then you can, you know, kind of let loose and have fun. But why shouldn't adults be able to get together and have fun without alcohol, and teenagers as well? And we should be teaching our children that they can continue to have those extracurricular activities even outside of school. You know, find your group, find your pastimes that you can engage in for stress reduction and for joy.
Getting to know and be familiar with and be equipped with tools to cope with things, and an alternative to alcohol or drugs to make your life good life. I really think kids, they don't know what alternative they can take to make their lives happy and good. You know, if it's exposure to nature, if it's understanding their own minds, it's coping skills, all of those things. And I don't think we really have an ingrained, you know, culture that is giving them that alternative. We're going to pitch them into this modern society, and it's like sink or swim, and they're grabbing for whatever's available.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when, you know, when you're pitched out into this world and what's expected of you after work is to go out and get a few drinks, you know, that can kind of wreak havoc with these programs that we're trying to instill in children when they're young, that you don't need these things to cope. You don't need these things to feel good about yourself or to be happy. But then, you know, it's very prevalent in our society that's part of pastimes, that's part of fun. And to try to redefine that, starting with children, but continuing it up into adults as well, because adults really set the tone for children. You know, as adults, I think we need to take more responsibility for creating that culture.
Mm-hmm. And Wendy, you do work quite a bit with the adults, with the parents of the kids or grandparents of the kids, right? How is that relationship working?
Well, I do have connections with parents. We know that when youth are at risk, it's important to partner with parents and the community to wrap support and nurturing and services around the young person so that they know that there are people who care about them And if I'm working with young people whose parents are struggling too, and it's beneficial to have those conversations about how are they handling their stress? How is everything that's going on in their lives affecting them and affecting, you know, their ability to connect with their kids, to be present in their families when they might be impoverished or underemployed or, you know, struggling with their own effective or ineffective ways of managing stress. So, you know, getting connected to parents is hugely important. It's also important to connect with our, you know, teachers and administrators and partner with them. We are all dealing with stress. We are all overwhelmed. And sometimes our feelings of stress and vulnerability get in the way of us having a more effective connections and influence with our youth. So one of the things that that I've come across in my career and in my personal life that's been really effective is an approach. It's called the Nurtured Heart Approach, and it was developed by Howard Glasser back in the 80s, and it was all focused in the beginning on how to help the hardest to serve kids thrive. So you have the kids that have been diagnosed with all different types of mental health issues or behavioral health issues, attention deficit disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, etc. And they have this intensity, this life force that they don't know how to handle. And it oftentimes gets misdirected. And if we sort of do an audit of how, as adults, how much we show up when things go wrong with kids and whether or not we're showing up in more vibrant and intense ways when things are going wrong than when things are going right.
Instead of the punitive approach.
It can really transform relationships. Mm-hmm. And relationships are what change trajectories for people. It is everything. How we relate to one another, mm-hmm. how parents relate to children, how mm-hmm. children and teachers relate to one another, how communities relate to one another. So if we can be more positive, and we can recognize even small efforts towards success, and then use the richness of our language and our attention and our energy to hone in on those moments, giving the impression that when a young person does something right, it's just as worthy, more worthy of our attention and our energy mm-hmm. and our focus than when they make that mistake. It changes lives.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. And unfortunately, we're out of time, and our next, John Case is here with his wife, and they'll be on with their show. But Wendy and Lacey, it's been a great conversation, and I'd like to have you guys come back and continue this conversation. It's something we really need to keep in mind and work on, and let people be aware of these ideas and alternatives. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. And then it concludes Seven Generations Radio. Thank you all for listening in, and John Case and his wife Carol will be on next.